Production. Recorded live.
Hello, everyone. This is Carl Shinneman, Director of Legal Analytics and Review at Juranov, and welcome to another edition of ESI Bytes, where we offer information from national speakers on electronic discovery at a price everyone can afford, which is free, and available when they're interested in listening to it. Today we have what I think is a really neat show about the problem of scaling and descaling the e-discovery process. Joining us on the show is Michael Scott, and he's recently retired from Alcoa. Joined Alcoa in 1988 through an acquisition that Alcoa did, and then became the leader at Alcoa in their Pittsburgh offices of their commercial antitrust practice group. He was also the resource unit counsel for Alcoa's CIO, the Trade Compliance and Quality Systems Groups. And his additional practice responsibilities include government contracts, e-discovery, and the globalization of privacy issues. Mike and I have been friends for a number of years, and we were talking over lunch about some of the problems larger companies face in e-discovery, and he talked to me about the differences between small cases and big cases. And I said, what a great podcast. So, Mike, first, before we jump in, thanks for joining us on the show. Tell me how you got interested in electronic discovery.
Well, first, Carl, thanks for asking me. I was kind of surprised getting involved in electronic discovery. Most of my career in the law, I'd spent doing my best to avoid any kind of litigation. But with the passage of the adoption of the modification in the new federal rules of civil procedure dealing with e-discovery, we began at Alcoa to notice that we really needed some way of translating and communicating and dealing with the IT issues that were now more and more impacting discovery. And as the counsel for the CIO, I guess I was the logical person and just got tossed in the pool.
Okay. Now, you know, when we talk about the descaling issue in e-discovery, what do you mean about that? Tell me sort of what you see the issue as being.
Well, you know, and I guess it comes from my work with AIT, but you always talk about scalability of processes. As you start something small, you work with small test bed benches and small-scale production, and then ramp it up. The idea is, has the process you develop, does it scale and does it become bigger as you efficiently as your business expands? And conversely, and I found at least impacting with e-discovery, is do the processes you've set up for the big cases, which are the ones that get all the attention and internal resources, does your process descale and does it work with the smaller litigation, the smaller matters, which are just by far the larger amount of cases and, in fact, time involvement, at least in a corporate legal department?
Why should in-house counsel focus their efforts on building processes for smaller cases then? I mean, what's the reason for that?
Well, I guess I'd first say that the in-house counsel really needs to focus on efficient processes for the cases they deal with. And by far the larger number of cases, thank goodness, tend to be small ones. They tend to be cases with one, two, three custodians where the operative facts cover a relatively limited amount of time and where you can be much more focused and need to be much more focused as opposed to the huge document collection cases which you get from second requests or government investigation or class action litigation or things of that nature. It's where you spend your time.
Well, if we were to try to look at the how you'd sort of design your process for smaller cases, what are the components of a process for an in-house attorney in an e-discovery case?
Well, I guess they tend to be the same. Whether you're dealing with e-discovery or other types of discovery or other types of matters, as you start focusing on them, you need to look at them and focus, analyze what is really in dispute, what are the issues, what is the scope, both geographic, temporal, and then as you go through and expand how you look at it, your process needs to be able to quickly identify where it sort of fits, and then to be able to put the right resources, the right amount of resources on it, realizing that, you know, in most cases, it's going to be a relatively small focus. And if your system doesn't permit you to have that small focused response where that's appropriate, you're going to be wasting a lot of money.
Do you think, since the volume of cases that most companies deal with are smaller, do you think that in-house lawyers can learn from their smaller cases, processes for larger and mid-sized cases, or do you think the dollars flowing into a big case just make it a lot easier to focus there?
Oh, well, the dollars, the availability of resources for big cases is certainly there as a fact of life, but you want to be able to spend that money efficiently to be able to utilize it and be able to work through processes and problems, both in the little case and the big case, and figure out what lessons you can learn to apply in the other side, and what lessons you can get from the small cases that are applicable into the medium size and the bigger ones, and vice versa. Part of the difficulty is recognition of what's what.
Where do you see the biggest opportunities to improve in e-discovery today?
I guess the biggest opportunity I see is cooperation, communication. The greatest fiction, I think, of the federal rules at this point is the confer element of meet and confer. People seem to be really good at meeting, but not so good at having effective confer out of it. And as a result, a lot of wasted effort. I still see or saw an awful lot of initial discovery responses that the first time around were pretty much simply objections without getting down to being able to focus both sides on what's the right amount of information, the critical information, so you can avoid the undue expense that exists, and especially e-discovery. I guess that leads me to the other point, I guess, for where there are opportunities. It's a way of if people will understand some of the ways and could work on rational cost shifting and understand where the costs and the issues are. And at this point, that's just a morass, and at least in the short term, probably not soluble.
You know, one of the other issues that seems to be coming out isn't just cooperation with the other side, but it's cooperation internally on the same side of the tent and trying to figure out as a team how to work with your adversary. It's easy to cooperate if you're getting the information internally on what you need. What are your thoughts on sort of that battle of communicating effectively between outside counsel and in-house, you know, IT people and in-house lawyers?
Well, you really do have to understand what people are saying. You have to understand and be able to communicate what the architecture is, what really does exist within the system, how do you access it, what is accessible and what is not reasonably available. You have to be able to focus that and do that on an ongoing basis. You can't expect, whether it's a small one small case, lots of small cases, or even and especially a big case, if you haven't developed that communication and understanding and inventory of what you have and how you can deal with it, there's no way you can be efficient and cost effective.
Okay. You know, we've talked over the years about innovation and records management, different places with managing electronic information where changes could occur. So I know you've always had an eye on trying to innovate and improve the process. In fact, process and Alcoa have gone synonymous for years. being something that Alcoa has been known for. In this area of e-discovery, who leads this charge to improve process? Is it the law firms, you think, or is it the companies?
It's like many things. I think it's a combination. Law firms, I guess, at least in my feeling, and I speak not as from my former role as Alcoa or from anybody else on this, I think tend to be with some notable exceptions, that tend to be pretty risk adverse and tend to be less innovative than they could be. Partially, I think it's where the courts have put some independent responsibility on the outside lawyer that makes it very difficult for in-house and business people to make some solid risk-based analysis. But I think it's a combination of some vendors who are beginning to focus in the area of innovation. Certainly there are people who have done a lot of thought in it, and it's the people from the Sedona Group, some vendors, certainly a number of jurists. It's going to be a combination. And I think one of the things is that in-house are really going to force it in many respects because the cost issues are of such importance to them. And small cases are going to be ones where that may tend to happen because the resources won't be available, and you're going to have to figure out how to make do with less resources.
Do you have any advice now looking back and looking on where you got to in terms of the field, understanding the field still developing for in-house attorneys who might want to improve and how they react to e-discovery? Maybe they're just starting to experience it.
I guess this is one of the areas where, and it may be some sort of a trite word, but networking. People in e-discovery, whether it's vendors in many cases or even outside firms with specialized practice, and certainly other in-house counsel. But that sort of networking can be very, very helpful. In that regard, probably the most benefit of various conferences that you can go to, such as the one done by George Washington University and things of that nature, it's the networking where the ultimate value comes. I think you need to be prepared and remember that you can't do all this in the context of the current case. You've got to look at it and be prepared ahead of time, whether this means with inventory preparations for even if you don't expect to have to do it, being constantly prepared, having someone constantly prepared to act as a corporate representative as to the e-discovery process under Rule 30b-6 is very valuable. Read an awful lot. Talk to people. Realize that you're not alone, even though you feel it. You may feel it at any specific time. Reach out, and people will reach out to you.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't necessarily part of the topic, but we've been doing this thing in Pittsburgh that you've been involved in called Friends of eDiscovery, which isn't a formal organization. It's just a couple of cities, local people, local in-house lawyers, judges, some outside counsel meet every couple of months just to talk.
No, and that's been, I think, very valuable. There are a couple of groups which, playing off the word e-discovery, call B-discovery, and we'll get together for beers once a month or once every 2 months in the same way.
Dan Regard's group in D.C.,
yes.
I think it started. That's a great idea. I've always admired that. That's similar vein.
And exactly. And so those sorts of things can be extremely valuable. And I found in this area, people are really very willing to share their experiences, share their learning, share their thoughts, and it can be very, very helpful for you.
Now, I understand that you worked at a sophisticated organization which gave lots of thoughts to what was coming down the pike in terms of areas of law that it might impact you. You had a nice-sized legal department. Do you feel for, you know, the generalist in-house lawyer that maybe doesn't have a large staff, that e-discovery is something they can avoid until a case comes up? I mean, is that a strategy that could work, or is it real risky? I mean, what's your sense of that?
I think it's certainly very risky. I think it's going to be, in a lot of cases, practically, people are going to say that's what's going to have to work because I can't spend time to set up a pre-e-discovery plan, though it's not that hard. There are lots of checklists that you can get a hold of that will help you focus on step-by-step things to put in place, whether it be sort of an action plan. What do you do when the case comes in? What sorts of ways do you put it through some sort of review or triage to decide, as you're going to have to do with any case, who are your custodians, whether they're being custodians of paper or electronic documents, how do you get at them, how do you get to those documents. Preservation of paper documents is relatively simple. Comparatively, you put them in a filing cabinet or a place and you lock the door. Electronic documents are somewhat different, and many of them are very different in many respects, and you have to make sure that the processes you have in place, and you need to have them in place and know what you're going to do, that has the same effect, that you're not going to lose those documents, that you're going to be able to satisfy both the other side and the courts, that you have taken the appropriate steps to make sure you've identified, you've preserved, when it's come time, you've gone and appropriately gathered, whether they be paper or electronic documents. So you're able to, one, utilize the information yourself for purposes of your case or defense, and secondly, you're going to be able to satisfy your obligations under the rules and the common law as to the opposing party.
But then sort of to finish out the show and end up back where we started, which is this difference between large case e-discovery when the money flows and just then run of the mill. You think there's real good opportunity to improve e-discovery by really taking a more practical approach on the smaller cases, learn from them, and then employ them onto the larger cases? Is that where you think there's a lot of promise?
Oh, I think so. I mean, if you've got 300 custodians with documents and they're spread around the world or around the country, you're going to need and have to utilize some sophisticated tools and rely in many respects on a vendor. But if you've got a small matter and it's a small case, say a couple of custodians, one or two locations, limited time frame, you can develop a SharePoint system that's going to allow you to keep track of things. You're going to be able to have some direct involvement with your IT organization to ensure that the documents are preserved in the sense that emails are not automatically deleted and a number of other steps that you work through. And you can do it on a homegrown thing, understand the processes, so you'll be able to. It's easier to scale up, it seems, than it is to descale. But again, you're going to have to be prepared. You're going to have a checklist. So the steps are not surprises to you when they come in. Spend some time ahead of time looking at them without the pressure of litigation. Litigation adds so much pressure. It makes things much, much more difficult if you're doing it in the context of an existing matter. Be prepared.
Okay, well, good Boy Scout logic there. all right, well, Mike, thanks for joining us on this issue of ESI Bytes. It's also a pleasure to talk to you, and hopefully we'll be able to do more shows with you later in the year.
Well, thanks.
Okay,
thank you,
and to the listeners, if you've enjoyed this podcast, I'd encourage you to go to www.esibytes.com with a Y for a complete list of our show. You can also remember our show and website phonetically, as it sounds just like it sounds like Easy Bytes, which is that's how you sound it out, ESI of information. So, however you choose to remember us, come to ESI Bytes, learn more about eDiscovery before ESI bites you back. This is Carl Schinneman, Director of Legal Analytics and Review from Chernov, wishing you a nice day.